And our first talk is, we're fortunate to have Roberto, oh dear, Iarussalimski. Wow, sorry. he'll tell you how to pronounce it. Who is the principal architect of Lua and is just going to give us kind of a the background and the reason Lua exists, and then we'll go from there. So Roberto.
Thank you. Well, first I have to answer two questions. The first is yes, this is PowerPoint. The second is no, I don't like it, but I still could not find a convenient way to write slides in tech. I'm still trying to find a good way for the way I work, but I'm sure I will succeed, but I'm still trying. So, Tuesday I gave already a talk, a more technical talk about Lua, with trying to teach some basic ideas about the language. So here today I'm not talking about the language itself as Carl introduced it. I'm going to talk more about the background of the project, why Lua exists and things like that. It's more of the about Lua stuff, and I'm not going into too many technical details. And usually I pronounce my name as Iarussalimski. It's a kind of, so it's almost as he said, but it's E instead of I. So a very general outline of the talk would be, what is Lua? I'll try to explain for those of you that don't know what is Lua. Why Lua, why people choose to use Lua, the main reasons are selling points, why people choose to use Lua. And then I'll talk quite the larger part of the talk would be about Lua evolution. I think the evolution of Lua, how it started, how it changed with time, shows a lot of things about the ideas behind Lua, why Lua is the way it is, and things like that. So what is Lua? Lua is what we call a scripting language. It is a programming language with some specific characteristics, specific features. The first one is that it is interpreted. Interpreted here means not only implementation aspect, but it means that it can run dynamic code. This is what we usually call interpreted language, not an interpreted implementation. So you can just write a piece of code anywhere and can run that immediately. So this is a typical point of scripting languages. It is dynamically typed. It doesn't have type declarations. Type is done at runtime. It has a garbage collection. It has very kind of strong support for strings, like pattern matching and things like that. And it also has some set of features that are not that common in scripting language that I will talk very little today, like coroutines, first class functions with proper lexical scoping, tail calls, and other facilities like those. Lua is also what we call an embeddable language. What that means, it means that Lua was designed since the beginning to be used like it's being used in Lua Tech, that is to be used together with other applications. It's a kind of thing that you attach to an application to extend the application, to configure the application, to write macros for that application, and things like that. So since the beginning, Lua was developed as a library. It has a very clear C interface, so it's very easy to interface your application with Lua. And what we try to make clear, this is not obvious sometimes, is that that's not only an implementation aspect. That means it's, of course, you can get almost any language and attach a C API to it. I mean, this part is only an implementation aspect. But how well this C API is going to behave, how good we'll have access to all aspects of the language, then that has a lot to do with the language design, how the language implements things, how the language defines things, how things are dynamic or not dynamic. So these things, I mean, the whole design of Lua, it's since the beginning, takes in consideration the fact that it is an embeddable language. So almost anything you can do in Lua itself, you can do from outside, you can do from the application, and the reverse is also true. Almost everything you can do from the application, you can do from inside Lua. Of course, there are ways to protect both ways, but this protection is if you want to protect. It's not something that it's impossible to do from the beginning. And Lua, currently it's embedded in a fair share of applications. That it's Lua, it's a reasonable successful language nowadays. It has several applications that use Lua. Here is just a small set. We have the Olivetti printers, for instance, use Lua as in firmware. Nmap is a network analyzer. It uses Lua for scripting. The Wireshark also use most of these applications, except the printer use Lua exactly in the way I said, that they have a big independent application and they attached Lua for scripting to add script facilities for the application. There is also, this is an application we like very much. This is the next Photoshop, the next version of Photoshop from Adobe. It's called the Lightroom Photoshop or Photoshop Lightroom, I don't remember the order. And this one is kind of, in this case, Lua is kind of the reverse here. The main application is actually written in Lua, and the C++ part actually implements kind of libraries to be called from Lua. So all the hard part, the image manipulation algorithms, are written in C. And the application itself, the user interface, how it behaves with the user, is written in Lua. So this is also, we are kind of proud of this application. It takes some major project. And for those that already know Lua, knows that Lua is very strong in games. It's kind of it's almost a standard scripting language for games currently. And here is just a short list of games that use Lua. We have World of Warcraft. It's one of the most famous, with The Sims and a lot of other famous games. As I said, this is a very, very short list of games that use Lua. A lot of games currently use Lua. And more than just games, a lot of game engines currently use Lua. So a lot of games that use those game engines automatically are using Lua too. So, now let's talk a little about why Lua, why people choose Lua, what makes Lua different from other scripting languages. For instance, these reasons are, for us, are the main selling points of Lua, and all of them, for instance, are very important for games and for other applications, of course, which are embeddability, portability, simplicity, and small size. We'll talk a little about each one. As I said, Lua is provided as a C library. So even the standalone application, for instance, when you type Lua in the console to get an interactive session, this standalone application is a client of this library. It respects the official API. It does not anything that any other application cannot do. It doesn't use any internal aspects of Lua. So that separation of the what they call the core that has this clear API and everything else, it's very, very strong in Lua. Even what we do in Lua outside the core always respect that API. The API, it's very simple. This is also a point. We don't use fancy, or we try to avoid fancy features from C, things that we know that doesn't work quite well in some compilers or doesn't work quite well in other languages, like, for instance, var arg functions or functions return structs or things like that. And for that reason, it's very easy to embed Lua not only in C and C++, but also in many other languages. Here is a list of other languages that Lua already was really embedded. I mean, there are at least one real application using Lua with each of these other languages. So Lua has been embedded in of course, in C, C++, is the official API, but also in Java, in C Sharp, in Fortran, and even other scripting languages like Perl and Ruby provide, they provide, not us, they provide interfaces to Lua. So for instance, if you go to the Pro CPAN, is that for CPAN, you find there a module to script Perl using Lua, for instance. So it's a funny concept, but they provided that. And for Ruby is the same. There is also some uses of Lua with Ada and some other languages. So that's the API. It's really clear and simple. To these basic concepts make it easy to adapt it to different languages. As I said, Lua, the language itself was designed with this embeddability in mind. So a lot of things in Lua, it's made the way it is to easy the connection with external languages, with an external host, external application. And also a very strong point here is that the interface is bidirectional. A lot of scripting languages emphasize that you can call external libraries, but it's not that easy to call the scripting language itself from outside. In Lua, both directions are very easy, and it's very common to do, for instance, sometimes the application call Lua, and then Lua calls back the applications for a small service, and that service in turn calls Lua for a typical example is an application called Lua, then Lua wants to sort an array, then it calls a sort algorithm implemented in C, and the sort algorithm is called the comparison function. It's in Lua again, so it goes back and forth between C and Lua several times, and there it's no problem with it. It's kind of relatively easy to write those stuffs. Lua is very portable. This is a major feature of Lua. It runs on most machines we ever heard of, not only Unix, Windows, and Macs, but also all kinds of different boxes like Xbox, PlayStations, and Nintendo. I'm not sure about Wii currently, but at least the DS and other Nintendo boxes. It runs inside. It runs in robots, in very small. Sometimes there are Lua running in some chips with some 256K of memory. So it really fits in very small boxes. And we achieve this portability not by putting a lot of if-defs in the code. Porting Lua to different platforms, but writing Lua for just one fixed platform, that is ANSI C. We really try to follow the standard. We are very, very rigid about this following the standard. We really avoid anything that is not in the standard. Even things that are in the standard, but we know that some compilers are not good at, we try to avoid, so we try to write plain code that really runs unmodified in all these platforms. And currently, this is a more recent feature, but it's at least since Lua 5, so there is some years now that we doing that. We are moving, Lua has the separation of the core and the external libraries that come. There is a set of libraries that are standard, but they are not part of the core. Again, they respect that official API. They are implemented, again, like any other library you can implement yourself. And then the core itself is moving to what is called a freestanding implementation. This is a C term. It means a program written in C that doesn't use a lot of the C libraries like stdio and malloc functions, that there is anything that has to do with the operating system. So now the core itself is like this. For instance, memory allocation in Lua. When you start Lua, you give a memory allocation function for Lua to use. So you define how Lua is going to allocate memory. The core itself knows nothing about. It just uses the function you give it. So it has no direct, there is no file star inside the core. For instance, it has no concept of files. Again, if you want to load a piece of code, you give a reader function to it. So you use that function to read stuff. And so, for instance, that function can be a function that uses fread, but Lua itself knows nothing. The core knows nothing about files or about that stuff. And Lewitt's also, well, this is a not a very precise concept, but we think Lewitt's a very simple language. It has only one data structure. There is tables. Tables is Lewitt name for associative arrays. The complete manual here is the complete manual. It's kind of, this includes all the language, includes the standard libraries, and includes the C API, the whole API with C, and it's not a very small font, it's not like a dictionary. There is, so you can read it without glasses, so or I can read it without glasses. And we do what we call we have this slogan, there is mechanisms instead of policies. Usually we try to impose a right way to do things. So this has to do again with the embeddability part. So it's easy to adapt Lua to different applications. For instance, Lua doesn't have an object model for object orientation programming. It has facilities. You can implement inheritance, you can implement simple inheritance, you can implement multiple inheritance, you can implement no inheritance, but it doesn't dictate that this is the inheritance Lua offers you. So it kind of offers a mechanism that you can use to implement those more higher level facilities. And the Lua, it's very small size. It has to do, of course, with the simplicity of the language itself. The implementation, it's also very simple. It has some 18K lines of source code. The entire distribution, if you get from the FTP, is 200K bytes. The binary, after you compile it with all libraries, is less than 200K bytes in Linux or in the Mac, in most operating systems. And as I said, it has a very strong separation between the core and the libraries. So in very tight scenarios, usually either you don't want the libraries, or the libraries sometimes don't even make sense. For instance, inside the Palm OS, it doesn't make sense to have the IO library. They don't have files as regular files. So it's very easy to remove these libraries because exactly they respect the API. They are not part of the, it's very easy to separate that. And if you get just the core, it's less than 100K bytes. So it really fits in kind of small. We're still struggling to get inside the peak. There is a very, very small 8-bit processor with some 10K of memory. You cannot do that. But once we have 200K of memory, then it's not difficult to put Lua there. And Lua is also quite efficient, of course, in its category. I mean, it's if you are going to compare Lua with C, Lua is not efficient at all. But if you are going to compare Lua with Python or Perl or Tico or Ruby or JavaScript or any language like that, then usually Lua is very, very fast. And one thing that it's really important, it's that efficient in real code too. For instance, if you get benchmarks, you see that people, well, even Lua does that. I'm not claiming that we do not do that. Everybody does all kinds of tricks in benchmarks. For instance, if you get a Perl function in a benchmark, nobody ever uses parameter names. They just access the array argument directly, because in Perl it's very expensive even to create a local variable, my variable. So they use all kinds of tricks in those benchmarks. But Lua is really efficient in normal code. I mean, function call is efficient. Parameter passing is efficient. I mean, it's not magical. It's like in C, you have to pay a small price for this. So that's what I said in benchmarks. You try to avoid anything you can. But in real code, you just write regular real code in Lua. It's reasonable, efficient for. And that's because I talk a little more about that. It has some smart algorithms inside. For instance, it has Lua was the first, I think it's still the only language to use a register-based virtual machine. Most other languages use stack-based virtual machine. This is something that people are start to study now. For instance, there is even proposals for Java to use raster-based machines, although for Java it's not that important now because of just-in-time compilers. We have a kind of very interesting algorithm for tables. As I said, table is the only data structure, so even arrays you implement using tables, you just associate numbers with values. But the algorithm inside Lua detects that you are doing that and stores that part of the table as a real array. So it's really, if you are using a table like an array, it's going to be implemented like an array, but you don't have to worry about that. If your array is sparse, then Lua automatically changes back or keeps it in the hash table instead of an array, so you choose what is better to. And of course, the simplicity and small size helps efficiency. Almost, for instance, the whole interpreter fits in the cache of any CPU, so all those things also help a lot. So now talk a little about the evolution of Lua. Lua started inside a project between PUC, that is a Pontifical Catholic University, that's our home university in Rio de Janeiro. This is in the left, is one of the buildings of PUC. And Petrobras, there is a state-owned Brazilian oil company. That on the right is a very small part of Petrobras. So there is this partnership started way before 1992, started in 1988 or 89, it's still running this partnership. But in 92, that the story of Lua began. So at that time, we have two projects using what we call at that time little languages. Currently, the official name would be domain-specific languages. At that time, we call it little languages. One was a program for data entry. The other was a program to visualize geological profiles. And so the first program, the idea was that the program was to create graphical interfaces to allow engineers to enter data to legacy programs. So they have those big Fortran programs that you have to enter data in fix it with columns and things like that. So they wanted to create graphical interface that you could enter the data into a graphical interface, and then the program created the data for the legacy program. And so you wanted, you do the drawing, and then you want to associate fields with different parts of the drawing. And so they created that kind of language on the right that described that this drawing is a gasket, and it has those fields. For instance, there is a field D, there is of type float, and the initial value is zero. There is another, it's not in the drawing, but should be another field Y. There is, again, is a float, and it has, and a T, that is an integer, and the default value should be one. And then they started to add stuff to this language. So in the bottom, for instance, there is some conditions that the values should satisfy, so the program can check those conditions and present error messages or warnings or things like that. And soon they started to need more facilities for that language. That kind of language is very restrict for them for things they want to express. So that was the language for the other program, in the right. The idea here is that we wanted a flexible way to describe those kind of graphs. So we wanted to describe how many columns, what is going into each column, colors, kind of grids and titles, and what they call backups. That is when the scale, when the graphics goes up to the top, it changes automatically scales and things like that. There is a lot of things they wanted to describe. So we created what we call the SOL, it's cut in the top. It's a simple object language, and SOL means sun in Portuguese. And it's a kind of a mix of XML with BibTeX. It's a kind of BibTeX syntax with XML attitude. But there was no XML at that time, so I think if there was XML, maybe we would have used XML, I don't know. But so here is we have a kind of DTD part that we declare as a type track that has an X, that which is a number, a Y, which is a number with a standard default value 23. And then we in the bottom, we create a real track here. We create a track, and then we give values for those fields so we can create describe objects. And the main idea here is exactly that the fields are not only numbers or strings, but they can be lists, and of course then they can be other objects like here. So we can nest that like in XML. I mean, you can structure your data in how many levels you need to. And so, as I said, not only the first language, but SOL itself also shared some limitations. For instance, suddenly we want some few decision-making facilities, some ifs. We want general arithmetic facilities like addition or even some mathematical functions, parenthesized expressions. And we want some abstraction mechanisms. We want to put common parts in a common, to define just once, common parts, etc. So in 1993, then these are three people that were working on both languages. That Roberto is me, I'm a computer science. Luis Enrique, he's a mathematician. And Valdemar Celis, he's a civil engineer. So it's a kind of interesting mix of different visions inside technology. So we got together, and then we decided to try to create a common language to solve, instead of creating a very small language for Dell and another very small language for the PGM project. We tried to create a common language that could be used by both projects and maybe. So what we needed what we call the main point was a configuration language. The main use at that time was exactly that kind of configuration stuff to describe things. But we also wanted a complete language. We noticed that we should have whiles and if then else and assignments and variables and stuff like that. Of course, it should be easily embeddable because the main point of the language would be to be used with those two programs. Should be portable. At that time, for a very specific reason, because Petrobras, the oil company, they had some laws, because it's state-owned, they have some laws that restrict the way they can, now it's not that way, but at that time that restricted the way they could choose what kind of machines they were buying. So for instance, they could not say, I want to buy a Sun machine because this is unfair. So they had all kinds of different machines. And so our programs had to run in all those kinds of different machines. And one thing that at that point was also still important today is that the syntax should be kind of reasonably friendly. I mean, we joke it's not supposed to be used by our mothers, but it's supposed to be used by non-programmers, by technological people, but usually people that are not professional programmers, like geologists, civil engineers, or users like that. So it should have a not very complex syntax. And then, as we were giving up SOL, that is, as I said, the Sun in Portuguese, then a friend suggested a new name, and then Lua was born. That Lua means moon in Portuguese. So, and in some ways, it's funny that Lua, in some ways, is kind of smaller than Sol. I mean, it's larger in some ways, but it's smaller in some other ways. So, how was the first version of Lua? For instance, if you see that definition, that part is not that different from Sol. Again, you can define a track with exactly the same syntax. But the main difference that part of DTD was gone. Lua was not anymore a declarative language. Instead, it was a normal language. So you write in Lua the type checking part. That's why it was smaller than Sol. It doesn't have a built-in type check. So now track is a function. And the function itself, you write that how you want to check for the type, so you can check that the X is actually a number, and whether there is no value for X, you can give a default value for X. So you can do whatever kind of type checking you want to do. So of course that was more difficult for the configurator to write that part, but it was also much more flexible. But then he can do whatever he wanted. The idea here is that someone writes the second part first, like in the DTD, and then the final user writes only the first part. He doesn't even need to see this second part. So there is a kind of a expert user, as we call it, that would configure the program, and then the final user would only use those definitions. So the first version of Lua, that it was called 1.0 a posteriori, that means it had no idea of versions of anything like that, but just something that worked, that was great, that was very good. It has a very standard implementation. It used Yak and Lack to build the compiler, and then it created opcodes for, at that time, a stack-based virtual machine. And that the simplest thing that could possibly work, this is a slogan from Extreme Programming, and we were really very serious about that. I mean, it's really, when we look at that implementation, sometimes we have some chocks. We see, wow, how could that work that way? But it was that way, and it worked. So it was less than 6,000 lines of code. Since the beginning, tables was very, very important, was the only data structure. Everything that we saw, records, lists, and objects, are just different syntax inside it. Everything was represented as associative arrays. And here in the back, you see how we were serious about the simplest thing that could possibly work, for instance. At that first implementation, tables were implemented as linked lists. It was not even a hash table, it's just search the list for, but it worked, it was okay. It was, and we had very low expectations at that time, but what we wanted to solve our problems with those two programs, and if possible, if it could be useful for other programs, that would be great. But our main expectation was we want to build Dell and PGM. And fulfilled our expectations, both programs used Lua successful. The PGM, that one of drawing oil well profiles, still in use today in some oil platforms. And for our surprise, it was a big success in TechGraph. So soon several other projects at TechGraph were using Lua for all kinds of stuff. I must be fair, those pictures are not all of them for program. I mean, all of them use Lua, but not all of them use it Lua just in version 1.0. Some of them are more recent. But anyway, this an illustration of several. So what happened is that we already had real users very soon. I mean, we were in version 1.0 and had several real users. And those users, not only we had real users, but we had real users next door. So we had very easy access to us. We could not just ignore their emails because they knocked on our doors asking things. So there was some new demands. One of the first demands is exactly something that they are having some problems today. Of huge data files, exactly the idea of to use Lua for data description. We thought about, oh, we are going to describe that profiles and things like that, but soon people were using Lua, for instance, to describe the drawings themselves. So we have just descriptions with some 1,000, 2,000, 100,000 description of polylines, of small segments and colors and textures and things like that. So we need to improve the compiler, we need to improve the table, we did a proper hash implementation for tables. We wrote the first version of the reference manual too, that was a kind of self-defense, because That's the easiest thing. If you wanted to reply, read the manual. We must have a manual for that. So once we wrote the manual, then when they knock the doors, read the manual. But before the manual, we could not answer that. So. And as I said, again, because we wanted to avoid as much as possible to be kind of the oral tradition of Lua, we wrote down the very well-defined API tools, because exactly all those users use Lua in that way, that they have a program, then they wanted to attach Lua to their program. So the API was important, was very important since the beginning. So it was also, we had to document it too. So once Lua started to be a real language inside TechGraph, at that time that was in, oh, here I don't have times, but it was around 1994. It was in the big reach at that time was object-oriented languages. So the main two questions we had at that time was, is Lua object-oriented? And the second question was, why not? So, and so we tried to answer that questions. As I said, we don't want to impose policies. We don't want to make Lua an object-oriented language. I think object-oriented, it's good stuff for some specific things, but it's not the magical solution for everything. So we wanted to kind of a compromise. So I don't have the slide here, but we did just exactly the minimal mechanisms that we should put in Lua so that we could say that Lua was an object-oriented language, or it can be an object-oriented language if you like it. So that was our approach for that question, and it has been our approach for a lot of questions. Usually, that is that in Lua, and then we think, well, no, we don't want to put that in Lua, but what we need to put in Lua so it's possible to do that. That was usually our approach, so to keep the language really small and to have mechanisms that are useful for many other things, not for that particular use. We cleaned the CAPI. This is a more technical stuff. And a big change in the syntax is we changed the syntax for constructors. Oh, the slide is not here. Yes, we removed the at. It's a little like BibTeX yet, but it's more simple. For instance, in Lua 1, we had we had curly brackets for objects, we had square brackets for arrays, etc. In Lua 2.1, and since then we have only used curly brackets for everything. So it's kind of just syntax gets simpler. So this version just gets some extra stuff. It got pattern matching, it got some debug facilities, it got the external precompiler. So now you can precompile Lua to a binary form, so it loads faster than if you, although the compiler, it's very fast. I mean, it's faster if you first those meta files of a few megabytes of programs. It's faster if you don't need to compile them when loading. So at that time, we started to move from our TechGraph base to other user bases. We started just announcing Lua in some usernet groups. We wrote the first homepage in 1995. It was still in my personal homepage, still Roberto. We started to have very few people replied, I'm using Lua here, I'm using Lua there. So we started to get a few users outside TechGraph. And in 1997, we started the discussion list that currently the discussion list is the kind of the social life of Lua. It's where it happens, is the discussion list. Everything that's ever discussed in Lua is in this discussion list. But it started mainly for this reason, to allow users to answer user questions. I mean, as other people started using Lua, they started to send us questions and realize if they send that to the list and not to ourselves, then other people can answer that instead of us having to answer all those questions. That was the main reason to start the list. We thought about creating, at that time, by the end of 97, we have 100 subscribers. So we tried to create a lang.lua news group, but that was not enough users. Now we have some 1,300 users I think we could create, but I think nowadays not that important. People are very happy with the list, so we gave up the idea of. And also in 96, there was two papers about Lua that was very funny. There was one, a more academic paper in software practice in experience that was very good for our curriculum, but got practically no effect. I mean, nobody ever reacted to that paper, at least at that time. And there was an article in Dr. Dobbs that was not good for our curriculum, but was very effective. We got a lot of replies. A lot of people learned about Lua for the first time because of that article. And in particular, that was this guy from LucasArts, Brett Modzilewski. He sent this message that he wrote, he read about Lua in Dr. Dobbs, and he tried to use Lua in his game that he was writing inside LucasArts, and he did it actually. And so that was the Grim Fandango, was the very first, at least famous, I think was the very first game to use Lua. It was a very famous game at that time. This was in 1998. And since then, Brett was a kind of evangelizer, that's how you say, evangelizer for Lua. Once there was a game developer conference, he was in the audience and people were discussing about scripting languages, and at the end he stand up and said, oh, I used Lua in that game. Of course, he has a name because LucasArts is an important company. And many, many years later, we still find people that say, oh, I first learned about Lua when Brett told that. That's just a small comment in the audience. Oh, I want to say there were some 300 people in the audience and a lot of people that when Lua really started to spread in the game industry. This is just something that I like. This is another game, it's cut there, but it's the Escape from Monkey Island. It's another game from LucasArts. And at that time they gave us a little credit, unofficial credit in this bar that they renamed the bar as a Lua bar in the scenario. So Lua 3.1 got something that it's very important today in Lua. It's more technical, but it got what's called anonymous functions that you can just create functions on the fly. The main motivations at that time, still for instance in iterators, you want to traverse a table and to apply a specific function to each pair of elements in the table. So we call that function key with parameters key and v for the k and v for the key of the table and the value of the table, and do whatever you want with that part. Another typical use is for callback functions. For instance, you want to define what to do when the user press a button in some widget, and then you want to write a function there. So this is very handy. It's very strong mechanism in Lua since then. I'm not sure I have time to discuss that. So just discussing the general idea. There was some pressing then for multi-threading. We always have been discussing multi-threading in Lua since a long time in different settings. The first main pressure was at that time people were still using, but at that time was stronger, the use of Lua for web servers. And so there was some operating systems that I'm not naming here are not very good at creating processes. They are kind of very slow to create processes. They prefer to create threads instead of processes. So people wanted us to make Lua multi-threading so they could use Lua on those on web servers for those specific operating systems. But we don't like the idea of multi-threading. We still don't like the idea. We'll talk a little more about that. But what they really wanted was processes. I mean, they wanted independent stuff. It just happened that the operating system was not good at creating processes. But then we could create what we call Lua processes. There are multiple independent states in an application that I think LuaTech uses that currently. There was no shared memory. They are completely independent. And so each C thread, you could create threads in C, but each C thread has its particular state, Lua state, and so they do not interfere, at least in the Lua part, they do not interfere at all. So it was kind of, the main problem at that point is that that would require a major change in the API, because now all functions in the API would require an extra argument, which would be what state you want to act upon. So except the first function to create states, but every other function would need. So that would be a big change in the API. So instead, we try a compromise that we had one single variable inside the code that told which state is the current state, and we just added two functions to change that state. But that was not very good. What was kind of a temporary situation. Then we got courage, and in Lua 4 we really made a big change in the API. This was a kind of traumatic change in Lua, but we needed to do that. And we also took the opportunity as we were changing, we changed a lot of other things. That was a real big change from to 4.0. But it helped Lua take the shape it has today. And then when we were planning for 4.1, again we had pressure for multi-threading, but that was a quite different kind of multi-threading. Now people wanted multiple characters in games. They want that character do something while that other character do something, and they interact, etc. And they wanted real threads to describe each one. And as I said, we don't like multi-threading. When I say multi-threading, I'm meaning preemption. That means that you can interrupt a thread anytime, and shared memory. Among other things, our main official excuse at that time was that it's not non-portable. And as I said, Lua is follow ANSI C. There is no ANSI implementation of threads. So that was a kind of our official excuse. But we really don't believe in multi-threading except in very deep inside an operating system. I mean, you should finish that part, and then nobody else should ever care about that stuff, because it's completely impossible to write correct programs in multi-threading. And anyone that tried to write anything a little complex using semaphores or using monitors or using whatever you want to use, I mean, I'm sure there will be bugs. And you never find the bugs. Sometimes this is good, because then you think there are no bugs because you cannot find them, but your program just crashes from every 3 days, every 4 days, and don't know what it is. You blame the operating system. Usually that's depending on the operating system that it's easy to blame. Sometimes the operating system is the one that has that kind of bugs too. So. And so the solution that we proposed was to use coroutines. That coroutine is almost, the main difference of coroutines to multi-threading is that there is no preemption. You cannot stop someone in the middle, just in the air. They have to yield, when they want to yield the control. And that happened that it was very good for games. Games actually, they prefer, most game developers actually prefer sometimes coroutines instead of threads. Lua usually used in a high level of the game of description, so it's easy if the characters interact in a predictable way, so one character does something. And of course, in the background, that can be real threading in C or whatever they want to do the action, the movements. But in the high level description, it's easier when you have a more finer control over the what's going on. And then we have a lot of plans for one. We at that time, I think, because it took a long time to settle that coroutine part. So while we were doing that, we developed several new algorithms. When we created the raster-based virtual machine, the new algorithm for tables, the one I talked about, the stored arrays as arrays. We also created new algorithms for the lexical scoping part. There was a lot of changes at that time. And then we decided that we should change again the version, so we went straight from 4.0 to 5.0. And 5.0, as usual, added some other stuff. But that was in the beginning of 2003. And I think that was the last big change. Since then, we are much more stable. I'm not going to talk. And then the Lua 5.1 was released last year. The main change is an incremental garbage collector. That was a big demand from games, that sometimes games stopped in the middle to do garbage collection. So they really need an incremental garbage collection. And another big change that I don't think it impact Lua tech. I think they are going to disable that. I'm not sure this. But for other uses, it's very important that support for dynamic libraries or for C dynamic library to load C code dynamically. This, of course, is not portable. So it was a big decision for us to put that inside Lua. But it's what we call it the mother of all non-portable libraries. Because once, of course, this module cannot be dynamically loaded. So this is a problem. So it should be inside Lua. But then everything else that is non-portable, it can be outside Lua, and then you dynamically. Once you have this module in Lua, then everything else can be outside. So we decided that this module deserves to be inside Lua. So this is the only part of Lua. It's a very small part that needs ifdefs to, I mean, if it's Windows, use the Windows stuff to load DLLs. If it's now almost everyone else use DL open and DL stuff, so even Mac now use that facility. So it's Windows and everything else. I think Windows is more used than everything else, but anyway. So this is the only part of the code that is. And so to end here is to see the evolution of complexity of Lua since the beginnings. This is lines of code since the first version 1.0 to the current version. Of course, this is not the real complexity of the language, but it's a kind of a proxy for the complexity. We see that we have a more or less linear growth. This is not exponential, it's not logarithm scale, this is linear scale. So I think we are growing relatively well. I mean, I think we're not exposing the. And there are some books about Lua. This is the main book. Copy here. This, yes, people say the color is never the same. This is the right color here. And it has been translated to German. It has been translated to Korean. It's being translated to Chinese. And surprisingly, it's not being translated to Portuguese. As I was discussing outside, I think people in Brazil think that I should be responsible for the translation. And I say a lot of people ask me, oh, don't we want to translate? We wanted to translate it. But okay, just give me a contract. It's that easy. People in Korea do that through the email. It's just exchange the 5 emails, and that was what was needed. Just do that, and then no, but it's always, I mean, there is a lot of proposals, but it never happens. So there are some other books. There is the reference manual now is a book, and there is these two independent titles specifically about Lua. There are several other books about games that discuss Lua. There are some with a lot of some 7-10 chapters about Lua. There's others with one chapter about Lua. There are others with a few pages about Lua, but a lot of books about games now discuss Lua, but there is one that is completely about Lua, and there is this other one that was the first book from outside our group that discuss Lua outside the game context. And so that's it. Yes, I think yes. That's the oops. Sorry. That's what happened here. Just try to return here. How to oops. To go. Just a moment. I'll try to arrive there. Oops. This one. You see, you have much larger in. Here, much
larger. Here is a time scale, so you have much larger time here, and here is larger time for a minor version. So I think we are much more stable.
One of the reasons is that really I think that 5.0 was a kind of maybe the first version that when we released it, we were not thinking about the next one, so we were kind of satisfied with it, a kind of, oh, this is, except for the incremental garbage collector, but that came with, but that implementation, it doesn't affect users. So the other reason, of course, is the books. I think the books are kind of, they are much slower to evolve. So once we have the book, we are going to change that. We have to release a new edition of the book, all the documentation will be outdated. So this puts a kind of, and also of course a lot of users outside, and you now have much more users than we had, that put a lot of pressure on us to not to change things too radically as we did in the past. I think we are much more mature now.
On the topic of complexity of the code, so you use number of lines as a measure. Is it possible to get like number of decisions with inside the program, like number of if statements or anything of more decisions?
Yes, I think it would be more or less the same. I
same number of ifs but more processing in between that counts as a.
Yeah, no.
Maybe.
No, I think it's more like what I mean is the number of ifs will be proportional to the number of lines. We didn't change that much our way of programming here. So I think it's more or less the same. As I said, of course, complexity, it's a very abstract thing. So this is just an approximation. But for instance, you get the manual, if you get the growth in the number of pages in the manual, I think it is more or less like this too. It's not exactly that, but it's linear too.
I'm just wondering, are you the like the main principal programmer? How many programmers are there writing this?
Actually, currently, the Lua itself, I am the only programmer. Luis Enrique sometimes writes very small parts. Valdemar just look at the code, but I am practically the only programmer. That's another reason to keep it small. And what we do exactly is that we really encourage people to write extensions, to write libraries, to write stuff outside the core. That's why we want to keep that very strong separation, so we can evolve separately. So.